change games whenever they are scored, but it's bloody useful to score them late on, as Reading know much to their costs lately. But Mo Bower's 90th minute strike on Saturday meant it was our turn to inflict the misery and effectively relegate Ipswich in the process. Welcome to episode 187 of the Tyler Sen Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Mayo, and fresh from Portman Road in that little corner where I was over on the right-hand side and over on the left-hand side was my my co-star for this episode of the podcast is Simeon Pickup, a.k.a. Bucks Royal, the editor of the Tyler Sen. How's it going, mate?
I'm absolutely marvellous, thank you. I'm still kind of on a bit of a high after yesterday. It's one of those results where it's not just great to get it on the day, but you really get that buzz the next day, and I've missed that feeling, to be honest, and yeah, just love it.
Yeah, it is really nice, isn't it? Especially when you know that you have the whole week, and it's obviously the big game at the end of the week is going to be almost, you know, probably more decisive than the one we've just had, but just to have that whole week of a Reading win and a satisfying one at that to get into is really nice feeling. So we'll get into that, the Ipswich recap, then we'll have later on in the show news bites as we'll talk about catch up on the other Reading teams and a little bit of controversy around the club in the week and then mailbag and talk about that Wigan game. So let's crack on then. Reading 2, Ipswich 1.
View from the Tarhurst end.
Recapping this week's championship action.
So let's begin with some stats, and that is our second win in four, our second away win of the season, and the first time since September we've scored two goals in an away game. And Sim, we're going to go through it kind of goal by goal and then pick out the individual performances, but just to sort of summarise the feeling after this game, because in terms of a 90-minute performance, it wasn't that. I think we were much better in the first half than the second half. Ipswich were pretty poor, certainly defensively, and you know they had a couple of injuries, but I think Jose Gomez summed it up quite well when he called it a proper championship battle, and Reading played their part in that, and despite being a bit poor in the second half, came out with the win.
Yeah, absolutely. To be honest, it felt a lot like the Rotherham game, to be honest, in the sense of being a lot better in the first half and then really kind of going off the pace after the break. But the difference, obviously, is that we actually got the goal this time. We had the chances to get a winner against Rotherham despite blowing the lead, but couldn't quite manage it. Modu Barrow, ironically, missing a chance against Rotherham and then really making up for it with a really nice finish yesterday. Certainly a lot of things to be positive about based on the first half performance, that we moved the ball around really well, made some really good chances. Gareth McCleary was very dangerous down the left, and particularly that midfield two as well. Lewis Baker and Ovie Ejaria are really starting to come up to grips with what they need to be doing at the moment, really kind of giving us a presence in the midfield, moving the ball around nicely, creating chances for other players, and it's starting to look a lot better now. But the real problem is after the break, when the whole team seemed to sit off Ipswich, we weren't aggressive enough, we didn't get up the pitch and get stuck into them and really kind of try to change the flow of the game in our favour, very similar to what we did against Rotherham. And I wonder if that's an issue of confidence, tactics, or perhaps a bit of fatigue setting in, that we can play really well in the first half, but after the break, Jose Gomez doesn't think we've got enough stamina to really kind of be aggressive and go at another side and try to kind of play the same kind of football over the course of the 90 minutes. But certainly something he needs to rectify for the next game against Wigan. But hopefully the confidence is there from that late winner.
Yeah, the thing is with the I think you're right when it comes to the drop off, the what you mentioned there, the thing that I think you're right on is the fatigue, and that really sort of showed for me, particularly as Nelson Oliveira had to come off with an injury and Yaku Mate moved into the middle of the park. He looks very tired and sort of struggled to really, you know, put himself about, although he did assist the winner, so fair play to bat him for battling through that. But it was interesting because the way we scored the two goals were pretty similar, and it kind of was almost not the norm, not the way that we have structured our attacks typically. The first goal was just Tyler Blackett with a ball over the top to McCleary. McCleary, I thought, as you said, had a really decent game, probably the best game I've seen McCleary have in a long time in a Reading shirt. coming down the left. It's his second assist in two games. Pulled it back to Oliveira, who, you know, the defending is very poor, it must be admitted, but Oliveira peels off very comfortably. And honestly, it was never in doubt. As soon as he got the ball, I just thought, this is in the back of the net instantly. And it's nice to have that confidence in your striker. And he was riling the Ipswich fans, and he got booked early on for diving, which is a incident that I haven't been able to see back on any replays or anything, but I'm dubious about. But that first goal was just a case of just taking the chance and being a bit more opportunistic and being ruthless, and that's not what we've seen from Reading for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just about finding the space and then brutally exposing it. I think what it shows is that over the last couple of games, Reading are really starting to work out how to use the wide areas a lot better. You think back to that goal we scored against Rotherham, McCleary finding space down the left, charging up the pitch and then cutting it back for Ajaria. Obviously a very similar goal for Oliveira yesterday. But even if you look at the winner as well, Modu Barrow again finding space after Yakumete holds the ball up really well. For me, that had been a really problematic position over the last couple of weeks. We didn't seem to get enough consistency or creativity from our wide players, regardless of who was playing in the middle or who was playing up top. We just didn't have enough pace and ideas out there, basically. Playing people like Aluko out there, Harriet, Barrow. There's a lot of players in the squad who can play out in those positions, but no one who is really kind of grabbing the ball by the horns and putting in the kind of performance where you think they can't be dropped for the next game. But now McCleary's put in two, I think, really solid performances for the last two games. Mate's looking more effective than he has done. He's in a position where he can cut in off the right and go for goal, or maybe try and get on the end of a cross himself, because he's got the aerial ability to do that. And it's just a combination that seems to work well. We seem to be able to expose space a lot better in the opposition and really just make the most of it. And I know it's going to look like a case of really bad marking for the Oliveira goal, and certainly that's the case. But when you're attacking a defence with such pace and such directness, as you can do with McCleary coming in off the left, you can expose those instances of bad marking a lot better and make better chances for your strikers.
Certainly. Well, the first half we created a few chances. Mate, as you say, going into the box, and he had that overhead kick which almost made it 2-0, and ironically, if he wouldn't have made the overhead kick, it would have fallen for Oliveira to have a much better chance. So players getting in the box with Mate on the wing is not an issue at all. But that second half, we just I can't really think of a chance we really created before Ipswich equalised. And the equaliser, it was coming, and it's difficult, isn't it? Because we've been here so many times, and you retrace your steps quite a lot when you come to analysing these incidents. But it just feels for me like Reading, perhaps because of the injury situation and not being able to draw players off the bench that would necessarily suit the situation they were in, perhaps Jose Gomez needed to bring someone like John O'Shea on, having brought him on last week and it not worked. Maybe it would work this time, but it was all too familiar when it went in, I think on the 80th minute. You know, ultimately, we have to say that that was a case of Reading just not being good enough and really nearly costing us. And, you know, it's not, as I say, we retrace our steps quite a lot on this podcast when we come to late equalisers. But what do you think was the kind of main contributor to the goal specifically? Because the ball gets half cleared, not really properly cleared. It gets recycled back in, bounces along and finds the man at the far post. And, you know, it's just something we've seen far too often.
To be honest, I think it's less about the goal specifically. It's more about the flow of the game, really. Because if you do allow the game to go like that, if you allow Ipswich to really kind of start to get some control over the match and knock the ball about themselves and really put us under pressure, you're always going to be liable to conceding a goal like that. There's always going to be the chance that the ball doesn't fall particularly well for you and they get a half chance and put it away. And the best way to guard against that is to stop the ball coming near the box in the first place and to just control proceedings as you can and get up the pitch and just manage the affair a lot better. I think, as you mentioned earlier about options off the bench, there was no obvious person to come on into the midfield. You look at the three players we have in there, Ajaria, Baker and Swift are all very talented guys, very good on the ball, very creative, but there's not enough physical backbone there. They're not really the kind of tough midfielders that are going to get stuck in and break up the play, and they're not experienced either. You compare them to, say, someone like Joey Vandenberg. I know he's not great technically, he's not someone that I'd want to be moving forwards with, but you knew what you had with him. You had someone who could sit there, break up the play, and have that experience and real presence that we just lacked for quite a lot, to be honest. And it's exposing how bad our midfield can be in situations like that when we don't have someone like Rinnem Hoete to balance it out and really give us another way of playing, essentially. And that's it's something that Jose Gomez has to think about, how to rectify it. I'm not sure if bringing someone like O'Shea or McShane into midfield is the best way of solving it, but he's got to come up with some idea.
Yeah, it seems like a problem that we're doomed to face, at least until Rinnem Hoete, or maybe even Ezra Talahi gets fit. But you know, it doesn't seem to be like that's necessarily going to be happening anytime soon. The winner then, again, not your Gomez ball, not your typical passing movement with a nice flick into the box, etc. Miazga clears the ball long. Mate, brilliant hold up against some questionable defending, which, as I've said earlier, the fact that he looked knackered, and to hold that up and to play that pass at the 90th minute, that is, for me, what separates, you know, your top-level footballer, not talking, you know, your Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard top-level footballer, but top of the Championship-level footballer from your lower Championship footballer, someone who can pull that out late in the game, even though they're absolutely exhausted. And Mo Barrow off the bench, we all know he's got great pace, and that's what got him round the man, got him to the ball before the goalkeeper, and it was a good finish. And I think the thing that Reading have to take, and we've said this, well, we thought this after the Blackburn game, is we have to take this as the big confidence boost it needs to be. We've got Wigan at home next. It's not like we're going to Sheffield United away, which wasn't, you know, with great hindsight, an obvious thing to say, but wasn't the game that we needed after the confidence boost to beating Blackburn later on. It's the sort of goal that, you know, it just shows that you can be a threat at any time. I think it's very difficult to defend against that goal in the 90th minute, particularly as you're going for the opposition go for a winner. And it, yeah, obviously it was just a nice moment, and it was one that I think hopefully would serve to unite us as fans and players and everything a little bit more than the Blackburn goal. And you could see it in the players, the way they celebrated towards the end. I think they realised the magnitude of it. And that was a priceless moment for the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And we haven't had those kind of last-minute dramatic winner very often in the recent past. And it was just a fantastic moment, seeing the ball hit the net and the whole away end erupting. And then, obviously, after the game as well, the whole matchday squad coming over, Jose Gomez coming over. And there was noticeably a massive roar from the away end as soon as Jose Gomez came towards them. I think he finished hugging someone, and then he started coming towards the away end and applauded everyone. And you can tell that the love is there, mutual love between Gomez and the fans. And it's just great to see that real connection, that real sense that we're all in it together. And it's something that I think we always used to take for granted, perhaps in the McDermott days, or perhaps not even that long after that. But the last couple of years, the relationship has broken down a little bit. So it's great to just see everyone on the same page at the moment.
Yeah, it made me laugh myself a little bit for the final goal, because I was, as everyone was in the away end, quite annoyed after the equaliser. And I was kind of thinking, oh, even if we win, I won't be celebrating that much, because we've done it again, we've thrown away a last minute goal. And then when you do score the winner, you realise you actually do go quite mental and ecstatic as you usually do. So it's funny how that played out in my mind. But Gomez coming over at the end was good. We'll talk a little bit later on about the fans' form that Jose Gomez had in the week building up to the game. But now let's hear from the man himself and his quotes after the Ipswich win.
It was difficult. It was difficult, like all the games. Nobody can think, because Ipswich is in the bottom of the table, that they have not good players, or they don't fight, or it will be easy game. We cannot find any easy game in the Championship. All the games are very difficult, very tough. All the teams have good players, so we played a really Championship game.
So let's discuss the individual performances. I just want to get out of the way to begin with that the referee is a total 1 out of 10 in my book for the referee rating. It was really a case that Ipswich got away with far too much sort of niggling little fouls in the first half, didn't want to show any yellow cards, and then they started hacking us towards the end. and it was a bit too late really to really stop them. And as a result, well, I suppose not as a result of that, but we did have a couple of injury worries. Nelson Oliveira went off with what appeared to be a bit of a hamstring twinge. Emiliano Martinez was also struggling towards the end. He appeared to sort of pull a muscle in one of his saves. So we'll see how those go. But Martinez, I think the word heroic is appropriate for this one. He made a number of saves that on the replays, I've still, you know, I think the replay doesn't do justice to the one save that I'm thinking of when Andy Yeardom almost put the ball in the back of his own net. Midway through the second half, it appeared to be, you know, about three times quicker in real time than it appears on the replays, and he just made time after time saves that, yes, you can say they were, you know, arguably straight at him or the Ipswich player should have done better, etc., etc. But just his ability at the moment is that sort of, he's at that level where you feel like the defenders trust it completely. It's not a case of, oh, he's got a massive mistake in him, you know, a shot's going to go through his legs, touch wood, or anything like that. You have that real confidence, and I think the defence have that real confidence, that he'll make a save, he'll get there, you know, without parrying it straight to another striker or something like that. And that's, you know, I think that's priceless, and I think that's probably one of the biggest bedrocks to our sort of relative success under Gomez and our relative defensive success. And against Ipswich in that second half in particular, he was mighty.
Yeah, absolutely. The confidence issue is key at the moment. It's really important that defenders have confidence in their goalkeeper, and it's a mutual thing as well, obviously, because Miazga and Moore have played really well in the last couple of weeks too. He just seems to have it all at the moment, doesn't he? He doesn't spill crosses. He makes some really good saves. His distribution is really good as well. I remember one long pass in the first half where he booted it pretty much the length of the pitch for Gareth McCleary to get in behind, and then he just narrowly shot wide. But when you've got a goalkeeper who's that good all around, even when he's not doing anything, even when it's just, say, the defender's doing the defending, they're that bit more confident anyway, just because they know that the people around them are good, and that really pays off in their general play, not just when it's the goalkeeper making a save or a cross, but it really brings up the confidence and the belief all around, and it's great to see.
Yeah, let's move up into the midfield, and we've touched on it so far, but I must say I thought Ajaria and Baker were very decent. Baker, he played a bit more of a holding role than the other two, and it was kind of a straight line of three midfielders vertically going up the pitch in a sense, with Baker, then Ajaria, then Swift, and Baker seemed quite solid. He seemed to be very tactically disciplined, which was quite nice. You didn't see him too far up the pitch. He always knew to hang back and play that role, which was mature and good to see, even though, as you know, we know he's not a naturally defensive player. So that was good. Ajaria, for me, one of his best performances, you know, two good ones in a row, but arguably this one was even better because he just brought the ball out and beat a man and played very well. In that sense, very good in the dribbling, perhaps not so good in terms of his final products. But I was, I know I'm not alone in this, and I know that he's occasionally been a bit of a scapegoat during, you know, his time at the club. But John Swift, just, I think his teammates' strengths really showed him up in this game, because it really was a performance where he couldn't battle. There was maybe one or two out of about 15 or 20 times that he won a physical battle against an opposition player. There wasn't any noticeable final ball. There was a free kick we had on in like the 88th minute that he put and just put straight into the first man. His shooting was okay. He troubled the keeper once or twice from distance, but really, for while Ajaria and Baker were very solid and competent, I really was disappointed by John Swift in this game. And maybe you can move, you know, someone like Harriet or McCleary and play them down the middle, but given our lack of centre midfielders and the fact that he's pretty much the one that Gomez seems to trust at the moment, that's not a good sign.
No, I didn't think he was very poor, to be honest. He lost the ball too much, and yeah, he didn't have enough of an impact in the final third. But I think what you can say in his defence is that he's the kind of player that's capable of, even when he's not playing particularly well, even when he doesn't put in one of his better performances, he can still come up with a really good moment. You think about that Blackburn game, I don't know how good he was in general play, but he came up with the two really big moments, getting the goal and then obviously a really good assist for Oliveira as well. But yeah, in his general play, I do think he loses the ball too easily. He's not good enough physically in terms of being able to shrug other people off the ball or keep it himself, and it's something he needs to improve on. Perhaps that's why he's been playing higher up the pitch in the last couple of weeks. It gives him a little bit more license to lose the ball if he's going to do that. It's better that he does it higher up the pitch, and you got people like Ajaru and Baker playing that bit better further back in the pitch. But yeah, it's something that he needs to work on, really.
Yeah, well, we'll see how John Swift gets on in the Wigan game, because as I say, I really don't expect him to be dropped with Liam Kelly also not in the squad for the Ipswich game. And let's put that game to one side for the moment, and we'll go into news bites and discuss what else has been going on around the club in the past 7 days.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So let's wrap up with the other teams, the under-18s we'll begin with, who have beat Swansea 1-0. That was on Saturday. That was a very important win in terms of the Premier League table for the under-18s, because they've been on terrible form, it's fair to say, for almost months now, it feels. But Swansea, on worse form, are a team they beat. They now host Fulham on the 16th, the next time they're in action. The under-23s beat the Southampton team that are leading the second Premier League division on the weekend. That was a 2-1 win, Tyler Frost and Ollie Pendlebury scoring, so they're now 3 points behind the leaders. They're also into the semi-finals of the Premier League International Cup after beating Manchester United 3-1 with a Danny Loader hat-trick. Danny Loader then moving on to the bench for the Rotherham game and came on against Ipswich. There's no date for the Barks and Bucks Senior Cup game with Maidenhead yet, as far as I know, but that is on the horizon for the under-23s. And finally, the women's team. They lost 2-1 at the Madstad to West Ham the other day. The She Believes Cup means there's no action this weekend. But they're 7th, mid-table, and really just... I think they were probably aiming for a little bit higher, the women's team, this year, but they're certainly safe from relegation. And the better-funded teams and teams perhaps who are riding a crest of a wave, such as Birmingham, are doing a bit better this season. And they're next in action against Manchester City on the 13th. And, let's move on to some actual proper news then from the club. And this was the comic relief kit that was going on sale during the week. It was £5, I believe. And really, Sim, this was not a good moment for the club, despite its intentions. And basically, there was a limited edition amount of these kits. There was a red and gold sort of strip. And it was available online, and people could go up outside the ground and buy them as well. There was a big old queue. The people in this queue that went all the way around to the fun zone were told that they would all get a shirt, but there was reports of people buying 10 or 20 at a time, which meant that didn't happen. And for me, I think that this is probably a very nice idea dreamt up by someone in the Reading office, and it was probably executed by someone who perhaps hasn't got much experience executing these sort of things, because it just didn't go right, and it leaves a bit of a sour taste in the mouth, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, as an idea, it was great. I'd love to see a limited edition kits coming out, and the club really into do something extra for charity. It's really good thought and everything, but you do just think that they should have just seen the reaction to the kit when it first came out on social media, people being really excited about the prospect of getting this one, and obviously being very cheap as well. There was always going to be this danger that people would just hoover them up, getting 10, 20 at a time, and then trying to sell them on or something like that. And perhaps just some kind of cap on the number of people who could, the amount of kits that each person could buy would have been a good idea. Disappointing from my point of view. I tried to get one at about 9:10 online, and they'd all gone by then. So disappointment, but yeah, I'm happy for the people who did get it, but obviously a little bit annoying.
Yeah, and just my only other point really on it is that the fact it was, I am right in saying it's £5, right? And I have to double check that, because £5 for a Primark t-shirt is not very much, but £5 for a limited edition championship football kit is incredibly low. You think you could have made it £30 and they probably would have sold out, depending on how many they actually had. And you know, at the end of the day, that would have been meant more money for charity. So it just kind of baffled me that they set the bar so low. But ultimately, if the club ever managed to get these sort of things going again, hopefully they'll have learned from their mistakes, and it would be a good thing to do again, because, you know, this was a good thing. They raised money for charity, limited edition kits, all good execution, 2 out of 10, I'm afraid, guys. Final bit of news bites is there was the Star Fans Forum with Jose Gomez during the week. Thanks very much to Star, who arranged myself to meet with Jose Gomez beforehand, and just this was mainly a case of introducing the Tyler Sten podcast to him and letting him know that we're here and that we're, you know, like to think of ourselves as the number one voice for fans as a website, etc., etc., that we have. And I can just say that, you know, that we didn't discuss anything too revelatory, but EC came across as a really nice guy and was very interested to hear what we said, took our business card and stuff like that. So a nice introduction between TTE and the Reading manager, which hopefully will lead to bigger things. But for now, as I say, thanks for Star for organising that. They've got their Hall of Fame event coming up soon, which hopefully we will be at. And we'll have more on that in due course on the website and everything. And if you are at the Star Hall of Fame event, and we obviously will be as well, feel free to pop down, and hopefully we'll have some merchandise and some bits to flog our wares and whatnot. But even if you're not after some goods, then a nice friendly hello is always welcome. Speaking of which, and as I said, voice for fans we always are, let's go to the mailbag.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
Some thoughts then from Casper Clark to begin with. He says, is beating Ipswich that big of a deal? Seeing that Rotherham also won their game against Blackburn, what are your thoughts on that? And Mark Nevitt saying, in commentary it was suggested that Ipswich were terrible and yet we only beat them with a 90th minute goal. What does that say about us? Now, Sim, yes, this was a last minute win against what is de facto the worst team in the league. I believe they will be going down as a result of our win. So therefore, you know, we did by the fact of the scoreline struggle a little bit to beat them. So where do you stand on the state that it might not be that big of a deal? Because for me, I'm afraid to say that I have to disagree and say that, you know, Ipswich weren't that bad in the second half. We were a bit bad, but they did have a good go. We're much better in the first half, and beating them is a big deal because we're in a relegation battle. We can't, at the end of the day, our expectations may have sunk quite a lot, but we can't turn our nose up at 3 points, no matter who it's against.
Yeah, neither side was particularly good, but I don't think you can expect too much more when it's two sides battling against relegation from the Championship. And I'm sure I speak for Ipswich fans as much as Reading fans when I say that it's depressing that we're in this position in the first place. Not that long ago, we were both mid-table Championship sides at the very least, and the idea that 2019 would be battling against relegation is pretty sad, to be honest. But you have to take on the challenges that are right in front of you, and unfortunately the challenge that we've got at the moment is just staying in the division. And I know a 90th minute winner away against the bottom side in the division is not the best result that we'll ever have in terms of the prestige that comes with it, but it could be what saves our Championship future and hopefully eventually pushes on to better things in the coming years.
Well, like I said last week, that we're into this stage of the season now where playing the teams who are fighting for either their lives or for promotion is harder than playing a team who has nothing to play for. You know, Ipswich maybe on the weekend played a more ferocious, difficult game to play against than playing Blackburn did, because, you know, when you're fighting for something, I think this, as we get to this point of the season, that ups the ante in terms of their mental, the sort of demands on the game. They want it more and everything like that. Physically, maybe you just run that little bit harder, knowing that you've got something to play for compared to those teams that are on the beach. And that's why I think when you know you get to this stage of the season, and Leeds would go ecstatic beating Ipswich in the last minute. Norwich certainly would, although they've got a bit of history with that. And Reading have to as well, and that's 3 points on the board, no matter who it comes from. You have to enjoy it. Moving on, Royals Fan 9 says, why are there no midfield subs but two centre-backs and a right-back? At least put an academy player there. And Chris, similarly on the bench situation, says, why are we leaving it too late with these 80th minute plus substitutes? Last week it was 2 in the 86th, this week in the 81st. And then, although that was somewhat all right, he points out with Bauer coming on. And then Lodu in the 89th. Yes, they may have made an impact, but is there enough time? My point to begin with these pair of questions on the bench and the substitutes and everything is that Rinomota, Ezra Talahi, Baldock and Obito all injured at the moment. Richards, Bodvarsson and Kelly were either injured or unused. We don't really know. But with all those senior players taken out of the equation, you're left with, you know, two centre-backs and a right-back on the bench, and your hands are kind of tied. And I can kind of feel for Jose Gomez, because the players that he needed to change were central, certainly like Swift, and I know Ajari did get changed, but certainly players who you want to bring on just aren't in the club at the moment. And the academy player option, it's nice when you're not you're not too worried by relegation, or you've got a 2 or 3 goal lead, but 1-0 up away to a team scrapping for their lives, I don't know what you think, Sim. It's not quite what I'd do, and maybe it's best just to push players through 90 minutes and risk it rather than risk an academy player.
On paper, the academy idea is potentially a good one, but just looking at the players we've got available at the moment in the academy, I think particularly Ryan East and Josh Barrett as well, I think Jordan Holsgrove as well, they're none of them the kind of players that are going to come in and be able to really break up the play, give us that physical edge that you need to see out a game. They're all talented players, they're all good on the ball and everything, they're creative, but perhaps a little too similar to the people we've already got. And with that in mind, John O'Shea's not a great option. For example, Chris Gunter and Paul McShane aren't great options, but they do have something slightly different to what our midfielders do at the moment. So Gomez can change things around a little bit if he brings on one of those players. It's something that we need to develop in the summer, really, because the squad's got a lot better in January, but there's still a long way to go in terms of really having an entire squad that can properly play this kind of football and have some depth to it, because essentially we've been relying on Rinomota as a defensive midfielder. I know Bakuna was there, but obviously he got sold, and as it's a lie, he's been injured too much. That's something we really need to address in the summer, potentially bringing in another holding midfielder or two just to really give us that cover and those options when someone's not available.
Yeah, and if you don't have the players on the bench to bring on, then that's why I think Gomez is waiting so long to make changes, because you have to wait and see how the game pans out. And yes, he waited until after the Ipswich goal to make the two changes that he did, but there was certainly no point in bringing Loder on with the score 1-0, and you know, the way that the game pans out, I suppose it did in some ways work out, although it didn't obviously against Rotherham. And Roldemart Janozak asks, I know it's only been a few games, but have Reading ever had a better goalkeeper than Martinez? Shot saving, distribution, catching crosses, he's got it all. And Mark Nevitt, on a similar point, I just wanted to add in that he says that distribution is longer to the wings and seem to work to not place defenders under pressure. So, you know, as you mentioned, Sim talks about a long ball out to McCleary that Martinez sort of looped forward in the first half, which put us into a fantastic position, which I know you can catch on highlights, which I'd recommend. So Mark Nevitt saying, has Gomez got the message in that sense? The distribution will pick up first on Martinez then. It was very good against Ipswich, and it had been changed. And I think, generally speaking, I didn't have any issues with the keeper's distribution on Saturday, and that was, it was nice to say. I think in the fans' forum on Star, Gomez said that there's actually a lot of things that they practice. They don't just practice Martinez passing the ball out short and everything. They practice a great number of different elements to play the ball out, and we saw the full gamut of them against Ipswich on Saturday.
Yeah, something I kind of banged on about a little bit when Ancy Jokola was our goalkeeper. He's capable of playing passes out short a little bit. He's got decent technique, but where he really fell down was in his long kicking.
He could pick out the linesman incredibly well, to be fair to him.
Yeah, exactly. He could pick out the guy with a burger in row 10 without any difficulties. But the problem was that it made Reading seem very kind of one-dimensional, in that if they were going to play out, they were going to knock it to the fullback or a midfielder or a defender or whatever. and it just stopped us being. It made us easy to play against because the opposition could press us high up, and there was no threat of us kicking the ball long to a winger or a striker and really kind of giving them something else to think about. But what you've seen with Martinez coming in is that he can find someone in the final third, well, maybe not easily, but a lot more consistently than Jarcola could. Oliveira's good at holding the ball up. Mate, being a winger, helps a lot that we've got a big player, apart from Oliveira, to pick up those aerial challenges. And there are a lot of long balls going to McCleary as well. It wasn't just a few times, but it did seem to be a specific tactic that the ball would get booted towards McCleary so that he could try and get in behind. And when you've got someone like Martinez who can do that, it gives us just so much of an extra element. It helps the defence a lot because they're not always going to be under pressure having to take the ball to feet and then play it out that way. It just makes the whole team look a lot better. You look at, say, Edison at Man City. He's not a goalkeeper who's just going to play it short to his defenders. He's also got that habit of booting it out long to Aguero or someone. It gives City much more of an extra dimension, and the whole aim of keeping the ball and using it properly is a lot easier when you've essentially got more of the pitch to play with.
Yeah, I guess when it comes to the question of has Gomez got the message? Yes, I think he has. And as Waldemar says, Reading have never had a better goalkeeper than Martinez as a notion. My mind immediately, it doesn't quite go to Marcus Hanneman because I know he was perhaps a bit of an old-fashioned goalkeeper who had a couple of flaws but was nonetheless very good. But it does go to Alex McCarthy and Adam Federici. In-form Federici, particularly in his last season, probably for me is just about the pinnacle. And I think when it comes to his distribution and his shot saving, I think we can probably say with the longevity of it that he was a bit better. That in terms of raw ability, I think Alex McCarthy probably the best goalkeeper I've ever seen at Reading. I don't know where your two penneth lay on that.
I think they're about similar, roughly. They're kind of in the same ballpark. McCarthy, Federici, Martinez in terms of shot stopping. They're very, as you were saying earlier, about confidence. Everyone around them has confidence they're going to collect a cross, that they're going to make a really good save or something like that. Same with Al-Habsi as well. There was really that sense that the defence could rely on him. If the ball went past them, there was always a good chance that he was going to keep the ball out. But if something is going to give Martinez the edge, it is going to be that distribution, that he's got that extra side to his game. And considering that that is quite a common thing, or at least an increasingly common thing in the modern game, that a goalkeeper is expected to kick the ball out accurately, the fact that we've got someone like Martinez who's capable of doing that is a massive part of his game. It's a massive part for the side, and the fact that he's able to essentially almost get an assist, going back to that McCleary one again, the fact that McCleary has got in behind just off one long kick is a massive testament to Martinez's ability. And to be honest, the more I talk about this, the more sad I am that Martinez probably isn't going to be here next season, and we could end up having arguably the best goalkeeper that Reading have ever had, and he's only here for a couple of months, maybe even shorter if this injury is worse than we fear.
Well, that falls him into the realms perhaps of Matthew Upson in terms of great loanees who have come into Reading on despairingly short contracts. And you know, I did ask Gomez about Martinez potentially moving back to Arsenal, and he was asked the same during the fans forum, and it does seem like there is potential there for Arsenal to want him back in terms of what's been reported in the media, that he'll effectively be their second choice goalkeeper. I don't believe there's no sense at all that he's going to be going during the season, but in the summer that seems to be a potential, and we'll see how it goes. So another question Matthew Hutchinson asked: is Jose the best Reading manager we've ever had? We'll leave that one until the end of the season, because I think that's that might be just a bridge too far for a manager who could still end up getting us relegated, of course. And Sam Richard says, Matt Miazga has been such a big improvement on Thiago Eloy. Liam Moore has also improved since the change of manager. Said at the time it looked like great business, and I believe it's definitely shown to be the case. Miazga for me against Ipswich was just a rock. Obviously, we did concede from a ball into the box, although it wasn't really anywhere near him. But generally speaking, their mode of attack was get balls in the box, and I think at least 90% of the time I can remember Miazga being the one there, heading it clear, getting it quite far away from the box as well, not like a soft head or anything, really decisive defending. And he is someone that, I mean, I have no idea what the finances and everything are and the contracts and everything that will get into the summer. Perhaps it's a bit ambitious to think that we'll be keeping him or hope or trying to keep him. But in terms of business, I think it's been fantastic so far.
Yeah, I think he's been as good as Martinez in a lot of ways, and he's really brought a lot of presence to that back four. And as we were saying with Martinez, his influence coming off on the rest of the defence, the same is true of Miazga as well. Moore knows that if the ball goes across the box, then there's a good chance that Miazga's going to clear it, and that makes Moore a lot more confident. It allows him to try to come out and make those blocks and makes his job a lot easier. And I think just comparing Miazga to Ilori was good on the ball. Often he had that technical ability, but particularly with balls into the box and those moments where he really needed to concentrate, really needed to be sharp, he just wasn't there far too often. He was good in some games, seemed to come good in the tougher games rather than the less difficult games perhaps. But what Miazga is so good at is that he is always on it. He's always composed. He's always confident. He's always got that. He's always got that laser focus. Essentially, whatever kind of threat comes his way, he's always on it.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? That I thought of the five loanees that we brought in. I thought Martinez and Miazga were probably the most unnecessary because we had a lot of players for that position. But as it happens, I think the club basically took a stance that if these players were available, they were better than the ones we had, and that was a necessary evil, even if it meant expanding the squad a little bit to get us out of trouble. And so far it's working relatively well. Final couple of points then from the mailbag. Eddie Corr saying, look at the form table over 6 or 9 games. Ourselves and Rotherham are comfortably mid-table. It's not us versus Rotherham. Millwall and Wigan should be worried about both of us catching them. And that is, I think, a very salient point, because if you look at the last 6 games, in 20th place in terms of form is Millwall with 4 points, 15th place, Wigan, 7 points, and then Reading and Rotherham are mid-table with a 9 for us and 8 for Rotherham in the last 6 games. And QPR as well have only picked up 3 points in the last 6 games. So, yeah, it is obviously Rotherham that we're looking at the moment, but perhaps that is a bit too simplistic. And the table at the moment, Wigan 36 points, they've got a game in hand against Derby in the week. Millwall 34, then Reading and Rotherham both 33. So it's going to be 1 from 4, basically. And if the weekend goes right, then we can really see that that things can be looking a bit more comfortable for Reading, which isn't a word we've used very often. And a final point from Mailbag to end on. Loyal Royal says, the team and squad showed great spirit at Ipswich. Good communication between them all. McCleary's experienced head was fantastic. Moore is a great leader. Loney's playing well. Yes, we rode our luck at times. They are all cup finals from now until the end of the season. And that saying is no more true than the Wigan game we have up next, which we'll preview now in Any Other Business.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/TheTarlhurstEnd.
So, Sim, when we faced Rotherham, we were facing the team with the third worst away form in the division. Now we have the team with the second worst away form in the division. They have won 1, drawn 3 and lost 12 on the road this season. Wigan, they've drawn 4 in a row, 2 nil-nils and 2 1-1s. They only had 6 shots at home to Middlesbrough on Saturday. This is a team who are probably incredibly stodgy, I think is a reasonable word to describe Wigan. Good at home, not at all good on the road, hard to beat at the moment, grinding out results, very much like Rotherham are, kind of like we are as well, to be fair. How do you see this one going?
It's there for the taking, if we turn up, to be honest. I think any team in the bottom half, perhaps, if we play them at home, we're more than capable of giving them a good game. My real worry, perhaps more than the quality that we're going to have, all respect to them, my big worry is who's going to be playing for us. Is Oliveira going to be fit? Is Martinez going to be fit? We're going to be in a lot of trouble if neither of them are fit. So that is a big worry. I think more particularly with Wigan, I think they started quite well but have just tailed off quite a lot. Similar-ish to Bolton in that I think Bolton were in the top six after the first couple of games.
Yeah.
The length of a campaign can really kind of take its toll on a team, particularly one that's come up from the division below. Yeah. So it does seem that that's been going on with Wigan. And yeah, I don't see any reason why we can't win it if we turn up and if we learn our lessons from the last two games, because there's every chance that if we do go 1-0 up, there's still going to be those jitters in the back of the mind, thinking that we're going to have to sit off and try and protect the lead and kind of get into that same trap again. So, yeah, another thing for Gomez to think about.
Well, in the last nine meetings with Wigan, they have won five. There's been two draws and Reading have won two. However, if you flip that round and say the last five meetings, Wigan have only won once and then there's been the two draws and two Reading wins. So, really, Wigan are not a team that we can say we have a perfect record against over history, and they've kind of followed us to a large extent in the last 10, 15 years, although they've dropped down into League One a couple of times. So where do we think that the relegation picture as a whole is going to be in 7 days' time? Because depending on their result against Derby in midweek, if they lose that and we win on the weekend, we go above Wigan, we'll obviously stay above Rotherham. And Rotherham go to Sheffield United on the weekend. Millwall go to Bolton. That's a huge game because I think a Millwall win there will effectively relegate Bolton, who are 7 points adrift at the moment. Although, I mean, we might well think that a Bolton win in that is best, and that's probably where I'm sat on that at the moment. So, where do we think in 7 days' time the overall relegation picture will be?
That's a tough one. I really don't know.
That's why I asked it.
I'm sat here just really trying it, desperately trying to think that we're going to win it and think through the best possibilities. But I get more worried the more I think about it, to be honest. That Rotherham game was obviously a brilliant opportunity to go a few points clear of the bottom three. And Reading never make it straightforward, do they? They never make it easy on your heart. They always love giving you those heart attacks, don't they? I really don't know. I've got a feeling we're going to draw it, to be quite honest, and Rotherham are probably going to lose. A 1 point increase is obviously good, it's better than nothing, but again, there's a lot of opportunities to really start to pull away from the bottom three now, and we have to take one. Otherwise, if it goes down to the last day of the season, Birmingham at home on the last day of the season, we've obviously had a lot of disappointment with that before at the other end of the division rather. I really don't want to be going into that again. I don't want the nerves of going into the last day needing a result, and it's not going to be easy, is it? It's not going to be a straightforward ride, is it?
No, and I think that I do believe that Wigan will get something at Derby in midweek, because I think Derby is such a crisis club in terms of when it gets to this stage of season, lost three games on the bounce without scoring. Wigan at home is the classic banana skin that they don't want at the moment, and I think probably a 0-0 draw or something will be how Wigan come out of that. And, you know, I must admit I'm quite optimistic going into this game because, yeah, maybe it is the Ipswich game, maybe it's something, but at some point, I believe that we're going to score a second goal. I think going ahead isn't, obviously, it's not a difficulty for us at the moment. But at some point, logic dictates that we will have to score a second goal. And, you know, from then, I think we'll be absolutely fine. So I think we will get the win. In terms of the overall picture, I think the Millwall are probably going to fail to beat Bolton. I think that they'll probably draw that, or maybe even Bolton nick a narrow win. And Rotherham at Sheffield United, no, I'm never going to say anything other than a Sheffield United result going into that one. So really, I think this could turn out to be a pivotal week for Reading. Obviously, even if all the results do go our way, we're never going to be more than 3 points away from the relegation zone at the end of this week. But I think this is probably as good as a chance as we're ever going to get. And that brings us on to the predictions. And it's interesting that you said then that you were slightly pessimistic going into it, because your optimism meant that in the prediction league you were the only person who said that we were going to win the ways to the bottom of the table team. So you're your 3 points there with a 2-1 scoreline that you predicted moved you up to 18 points. You're now level with Westy in sixth position in the table. There were lots of 1-1s for Ipswich, myself included, so that was a no surprise that we all sort of banked on the Ipswich late equaliser that did indeed come. So prediction-wise for Wigan, what are you going to go with?
I don't know, to be honest. As negative as I am, when I'm negative, we tend to do better. And when I'm positive, we tend to do worse. So as much as I'm tempted to go with a 5-0 defeat, just to do as well for us as possible, I've got a feeling about a 2-2 draw. To be honest, I think we've had that scoreline before with Wigan in years gone by, and I think that's going to come back.
Well, I'm going to go for 2-0 Reading because I do think we'll get that second goal. And to be honest, even if Oliveira isn't fit, I think Mate into the middle with Barrow down the flank will cause enough problems for them. And I think if we do get that second goal, you will notice a palpable release of tension around the ground. And I think it'll probably be both in the first half if I'm going to be as ballsy as to make a full-on 2-0 first half, 2-0 90-minute prediction. So that's where I'm going to go for this one. So we now have a week, as Sim said earlier, a week to bask in the glory of inflicting the misery on another team. And then we go again with Ipswich. And then, of course, Leeds at home as well. So a potentially pivotal week in the relegation battle ahead of us. And Sim, thank you very much for popping along this time.
Thank you for having me.
And two home games now await Jose Gomez's team. And let's look at the stats. You know, we're the form team in the bottom 8 or 9 teams in the Championship at the moment. We're not doing too bad, could be doing better, but with that 2-1 win at Ipswich, it just shows that we are slowly grinding and slowly pushing into safety. And let's just see how that Wigan game goes, because we all know that Ipswich can be quickly forgotten if Wigan doesn't go to plan. But let's hope it does. Get down the mad set on Saturday for 3 p.m. against Wigan, 21st place 19th. Come on, you arse.
You smile, funny how the crumbs always leave a trail, even when it's